Hi everyone, this is Nina Amir, the Inspiration to Creation Coach and the author of How to Blog a Book and the Author Training Manual and 3 ebooks, all bestsellers. I am here today talking about blogging for authors. Really, I'm talking about blogging, which what it takes, how to set up a blog, your best practices, and how authors can create the best websites to help them write, promote, and sell their books. I'm really pleased today to be speaking with Robert Peters. He's my website developer, and he's an SEO expert, which is search engine optimization, if you don't know that term. He's also my business coach and partner in many, many ways in my business and with all my websites, and I have quite a few. So before we get going, and before I actually welcome him, let me tell you a bit about Robert. Robert has been working in and with small businesses for over 15 years. He knows firsthand both how difficult and how exciting business can be. When clients work with Robert, they get a partner in business, in building their business, a partner they can talk to whenever they need to about whatever they need to. And I know this firsthand. Robert helps small business owners focus on what's important, telling their story and getting their message heard, and what they need to do in order to get results. And then he helps them every step of the way. And he sure has been helping me every step of the way. So welcome, Robert.
Hi, welcome, Leah. Thanks very much.
And Robert is all the way in England, all the way, I'm in California, and he is in Great Britain. So this is a lot of fun to be chatting from across the ocean.
That's right. Yeah, it means I have a strange voice as well.
Yeah, not strange. I like it.
Thank you.
So we have a lot to cover today.
Yeah.
And I'm sure everyone's going to be very interested. So let's start out, Robert, with talking about what a blog is. So writers and authors don't necessarily realize that a blog is a website. Can you explain how and why a blog serves as a website or as a content management system, which is really kind of what a website is?
Sure. Yeah, I think... there's quite a few different phrases that are used interchangeably. A few years ago, especially in the corporate world, the word website really defined something that was quite static, that a company would have to probably go out and get a developer to make each small change, whereas a blog was seen as something that came later, that was much simpler, that you might just have at home, that you might be able to update and carry on yourself. So there was almost a time, I think, when the two were separate, and there were business websites and corporate websites, and then there was blogs, which tend to be not really focused on design, but focused much more on content. And then with the advent of Google, and the more people started focusing on bringing an audience to their website and getting traffic and publishing content in order to attract that audience, the two merged much more. It wasn't useful for smaller businesses and independent authors and entrepreneurs to have static websites that they had to pay someone to make every small change. But equally, it wasn't any good for them to have a blog which really just looked like a daily journal on the web. So the two merged, and that was really the space where not necessarily WordPress filled initially, because I think where really WordPress came in, it was that journaling tool that bloggers use. It was really the advent of, I guess, what we call the premium theme market, where people started coming in and taking WordPress and then putting a skin on the front of it and saying, look, you know, okay, this is a blog, you can change it as much as you like, but look, magic, if we do this to the front of it, it now looks like a whole corporate website, or it looks like a dance studio website or an accountant's firm website, but you can still change it yourself and publish as much as you like. So now those terms really have all come to mean one thing. And content management system is in some ways just a name for a website that's easy for the user to update. You know, you can decide when you want to make changes, how often you want to publish new content and get in and do that yourself. And I think that's been an incredible step forward for the internet and for business, and especially independent business, to be able to do that themselves.
Yeah, I think it has been a big step forward. And so why, you know, we're speaking mostly to authors and aspiring authors. Why do they need a website, do you think?
I think the really important thing for authors, especially with a website, is you have to have home ground. You have to have that kind of, you know, my house, my rules. Wherever you talk about your books, wherever you talk about your message and your ideas, you need to have somewhere to send people back to. And I'm a really strong believer that that has to be something that you own. It mustn't be someone else's ground. You know, you shouldn't be sending people, for instance, to your Facebook page or your LinkedIn profile. Sure, those are, if you like, outposts, and you can point people from those places back to your website. But you have to have somewhere where ultimately you set the rules. You decide what you can say there, what is okay, what isn't okay, and you can have it look however you want to have it. You can move it around, you can add and remove functionality. I think that's really important. It's replaced the physical location for some businesses. There are some massive companies now on the internet that really don't have any physical location, and their whole, not headquarters, but their whole entity, if you like, that people focus their audience and their following on is the website. So I think it's really, really important to have that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that also, you know, because authors don't do physical tours anymore, you know, they're not going to as many bookstores, their website is where they're sending people. I mean, the book is online in stores, but they, the events that they're doing are really primarily on their website.
Yeah, and you see some authors, both non-fiction and fiction authors, really, really grasp that and kind of go to town on that. You know, people like, I'm thinking of J.K. Rowling, you know, her, she's turned her website into a real experience, and quite, I can't remember off the top of my head when she stopped writing the Harry Potter series, but quite a few years afterwards now, people are still going to that site and, you know, forming a fan base around it, and she's still publishing new kind of behind the scenes ideas, and I think that's great. It builds up an element of community, and especially then for an independent author who might have other things like speaking agreements or arrangements or the need to develop other ways to make money, like courses or other things, then the website then gives them something to do with that community that they're building up and a place to focus that in.
Right. So I typically recommend that both aspiring or published authors set up their websites on WordPress. And you mentioned WordPress. I don't typically want them on Blogger or on TypePad or Tumblr.
Sure.
Do you agree? And can you explain why?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, for that same reason about it being your home ground. You know, if you imagine that you're there in lovely area of California and a friend comes to your house one day and says, look, I've got this big field behind my land and it's not doing anything and you can lend it. And, you know, you might do different things with that. You might walk in it. You might play games in it with the children. You might even put horses to graze in it. You're unlikely to build a house in it because it's not yours. And if you build a massive house in it and then someone comes along, or the guy who lends the ground comes along in a couple of years' time and says, look, you know that field I lent you? Well, I kind of need it back now because I'm going to do something else with it. People wouldn't do that. You just wouldn't build on rented ground. And that's really the message with WordPress.com and also those other types of places like Tumblr and TypePad. You don't own the ground. You don't set the rules. If they decide to change the rules or worse still close, then your whole platform is gone in a second. And you just can't build a business on that kind of basis. You have to have the ownership. There's a lot of companies large international companies that don't even like renting physical property. They like to know that if they set up a business in a country, they own the property, so that again they can set the rules. And I think a website for an author or an entrepreneur is exactly the same. You've got to have complete ownership of it, so you really say what goes on there and no one can have any impact on that.
Yeah, I totally agree. So what is this, for those who are newbies to blogging and to websites, what's the real difference between what we call a free or well, not what we call free, but the free hosted WordPress.com site and the paid self-hosted WordPress.org site? And can you also explain hosted versus self-hosted?
Yeah, sure. So WordPress itself is not the WordPress.com site, as it were. WordPress is a piece of software. It's a free piece of software. So technically in software licensing, we'd refer to it as open source. Anyone can take it. You know, if you download it and install it somewhere, no one will come along like they would if it was Microsoft Word and say, oh, wow, hang on a minute, you've stolen that software. It's free to use. But in order to give people a simple entry to blogging, and really just that, the blogging element, a few years ago, the guys at WordPress set up WordPress.com, which is where you can go create a free account and you can just start writing. Now, I've worked with clients that have done that and then they've needed to move off that platform. And it can be a little bit of a pain because you've built up your audience in one place. Some people, you can get your own domain name at WordPress.com and then you can move it, but it's quite a bit of hassle. It's actually a little bit more expensive to get your domain name and do that. It's certainly more expensive to come along and then get someone to move you off it afterwards. And again, there's that whole thing of, you know, it's not your place, so you don't own it and you can't set the rules. But also, certainly I'm sure anyone following your blog will learn about certain tools that we refer to as plugins, which are little bits of very often free software. Some are premium paid plugins, which you can add to your website, which allow you to fulfill certain tasks and do certain things. An example would be the little buttons at the bottom of a blog post where you can click to share it on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, etc. Now, if you have your own version of WordPress, which is where you just get the software, you can install as many of those and do it however you want. At WordPress.com, then they just stipulate the functions that are available and what you can do. So I don't think it's that great a place to start if you're serious about, you know, building a platform and you've got any business or author's intent. You know, if you were wanting one Saturday afternoon to have a really quick look at WordPress, perhaps even a couple of hours, see what it was all about before you went and signed up for your own hosting and did it properly, sure, you could create an account, you could play around for a few hours, you could close the account a couple of hours later. That's okay. But I wouldn't start any business on WordPress.com or building up your platform. Now, WordPress.org is more the kind of corporate site of WordPress, and that's where you can go to download a version of WordPress that you can install on your own hosting. However, very, very few people do that. I haven't had to do that for years because most hosting companies now have what they call a one-click install. So you go to a hosting company, you set up your hosting, which is the piece of real estate on the internet that you own that you're going to point your domain name at, and they will have in whatever control panel you log into probably a little button that says WordPress. You press that, it installs it for you. So you don't have to download it and worry about all the technical elements. And then you've got your own place. And the difference, and the reason we call it self-hosted is because that version of the software you own and you've set it up in your own place, whereas at WordPress.com, the guys at WordPress, or actually Automattic, which is the company that owns WordPress, owns that system. So, you know, it's not the same as it being yours.
Right. And they're providing their hosting and all that other stuff. You're not making the choice. And,
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and my experience also, it is harder to switch over later because I have done that. And I also, I can't even remember what exactly it's for, but I pay a fee every year to keep a couple of my sites just there because there were so many photos and things like that. And when we moved it all over, it was like, it's just better to actually keep the site there and have a redirect. Yeah. So I'm paying every year to just have it there and not just delete it. And it's just, it's a mess. It's just much easier to start on your own, you know, with hosting.
Yeah, definitely. My my wife kind of gets bored of me using a phrase over and over again in lots of different aspects of life, but I can't kind of help it. And that's that if you pay cheap, you pay twice. And I think that's definitely true when it comes to WordPress, you know, especially if by paying it's effectively free, it will cost you at some point. It might cost you in time, it might cost you in services to get the content lifted off and taken somewhere else. It's the same with other free website providers. You know, I've had lots of clients over the years that have come to me and said, well, I set up this website with this company that said I could have the domain name for free, and now I'm trying to move, and I have to give them $200 for the name, but the name's only £5 if you go and register it. Well, yeah, that's because when that company registered it, they did it in their name, not yours. So you've got to get the ownership and everything sorted right at the start and do it right first time, I think.
Right. And just as an aside, also with WordPress.com, you can pay to upgrade, and they'll say that you're going to, you know, get the premium themes and all kinds of things, but you pay for that, and that's what gives you the URL of your own. But if you don't renew on time, they charge you much more. And plus, you still really are not choosing your hosting company or any of that. You're still living by their rules.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Yeah. So how do you pick? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's exactly the same when it comes to other systems like Microsoft's Office 365. You know, it can seem simple and quick to go and host a business website, but ultimately it will prove more hassle further down the line.
Right. So how does somebody pick a hosting company? Because, you know, you're saying that it's pretty easy. They can do the one-click install, but how do they know? I mean, I've had lots of problems with hosting companies. So how do you pick a good hosting company?
Hosting's one of my kind of bugbears. What people normally do when they start a business is go out and spend lots of money on a logo, lots of money on a design, lots of money on, you know, great photos and things like that, and then quibble over spending $5 a month on hosting. And then 6 months down the line, when they've got more than 10 visitors a day, the website keeps crashing and all the visitors get errors, and they're kind of saying, wow, you know, this is hard. Why does it... I've always said, if you've got a limited budget at the start, spend it on hosting. Because if you write good content and you build up a readership, people will forgive the fact that you don't have an amazing logo yet. They'll forgive the fact that you're using a free WordPress theme. But they won't forgive the fact that they can't get to your site, or when you've got two visitors at the same time, it's too slow. Now, I'm not a believer. It's coming from a technical background. I'm not necessarily a believer that you should not go with a company that has negative reviews, because in the real world, problems happen. And as soon as you put a plug into the wall with anything that's got technology into it, it will go wrong and crash at some point. And it's normally nothing to do with the technology. It's the engineers that are working on it, or someone's had a hard afternoon and they've forgotten something. And these things happen. For me, it's all about how people resolve stuff. I'd rather work with a company that's just had a major problem but I could see that they were on it and they dealt with it really quickly, and they were open in their communication about it, rather than a company that says nothing's ever gone wrong, because that makes me skeptical and think, well, sooner or later it's going to. So it either hasn't, and frankly you're due, or it has, and you're trying to cover it up, and that concerns me. So yeah, I think in terms of hosting, if you're an author or you're an entrepreneur, you need to look for hosting that's business class. When you look at the website of the hosting company, if all of the example WordPress websites they have are things like, you know, Auntie Mary's cupcake blog and stuff like this, not that there's anything wrong with that at all, but if that's the kind of sites they're suggesting, and you're just about to open a site for your book that you think is going to go viral and you're going to have 1,000 visitors a day, well, it's probably not the hosting company to go with. You know, you want to look out for hosting companies that look like they're up to the job. Companies that mention the type of sites they have and they look like yours. And also companies that specialize in WordPress, and those that actually do, not just the ones that say they do. You can look on Facebook, and never be afraid to check out some of those case studies and reviews. You know, if one of the great things with hosting case studies is people will say, well, you know, Nina at howtoblogabook.com hosts a website. Well, if that was me and I was looking around for hosting, I'd go to your site, find your contact form, I'd drop you a note and say, you know, hey Nina, I saw that ABC Hosting Limited are using your name as a case study. What's really your experience with them? Are they as good as they say in the case study? I've done that, and I found sometimes I'll come back and say, yeah, well, I wrote that case study about 5 years ago, and since then, well, they've had some issues. So it's worth investigating. It's like when you get a builder for your house, you should always ask them to talk to the last 3 jobs they've done to make sure that, you know, it turns out really well. So there are some really good hosting companies. Look for specialists. Look for people that are definitely not the cheapest. There are a wide variety, and there's quite a few to name, and there's probably such a wide variety of prices. But you, in US currency, I would say you definitely want to be looking above, I don't know, $10-$15 a month. Just as a really rough guide, if you're looking at hosting that's like $5 a month, then you're probably looking at the wrong type of company if you're going to build a business on it. Because you might think that, you know, $55 or $60 a year is quite cheap. Trust me, when you have to then pay a consultant $300 or whatever to take your website off that company and put it to another one, where there you have to start paying another year's worth of hosting, it'll start getting expensive real quick. I pay a little bit more upfront to get it there. With hosting, you want to just be able to put it somewhere and forget about it and focus on the content, because building an audience online is hard enough without having to worry about, you know, your hosting every day.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. And having to move it is not fun. And I've had to do that a couple times in the last year because I wasn't happy with my hosting. And so And definitely paying more is better, I think.
Yeah. And also, don't ever be too worried about having hosting that feels like it's too big for you. I remember I moved my own site to hosting that said, wow, this hosting is okay for 10,000 visitors a day. And I certainly wasn't getting 10,000 visitors a day, but I just had this feeling that I didn't want to get 500 visitors a day one day and for it to fall over. So I thought, well, I'd rather move it now and know that I've got the capacity. And then, well, if it happens one day, great. But if it doesn't, well, I'll just leave it there and I can forget about it. It's really difficult to move a website in the middle of it being really famous. And there's all kinds of horror stories on Twitter. I remember, especially a couple of years ago, you know, these viral things would happen where a big marketer would hear about a little company or one person's blog who'd written a really great post, and without telling them, they tweet it to 400,000 followers and say, hey, just read this, it's really cool. And straight away, bang, website went down because the hosting couldn't cope with 20,000 visitors. And that person will probably never tweet that link again. It was just a moment in time. And the whole reaction to that tweet was simply lots of people saying, oh, well, we couldn't read it because it went down. So, yeah, you want to get to that point where you can handle that before you need it.
Right. And definitely the customer service, because that's
yes,
so important.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, so what are the primary elements of a blog or a website, the things that every author needs on his or her website?
Okay, so you have to think about certain conventions, and you especially need to think in terms of, there's a really good book by a guy called Steve Krug, Steve, S-T-E-V-E-K-R-U-G, called Don't Make Me Think. And in that book, he talks about conventions and says, you know, for quite a few years now, when you ring someone up and you get their answer machine, it still says, or their voicemail, it still says leave me a message after the beep. But it doesn't really need to, because we're all preconditioned now that we know when you hear the beep, you talk afterwards. No one really needs that lesson anymore. And it's a bit the same as your website. If you're on a website and you get lost, you look for the home button. If you're on a website and you don't really know who the person is who's writing, you look for the about button. And if you're on a website and you want to contact the person with a question, you look for the contact button. And I think those are three conventions that are really important: home, about, and contact. And I get people all the time who say, yeah, I want to do something different. I want to be different. And I don't want it to say about. I want it to say, yeah, but you don't need to, because people understand the convention of the about page and they expect to learn about you. And in most people's analytics and website stats, you'll find that the about page is always the second most visited page on the site after the home page. So the about page is there for a reason, and I would never try and be too artistic with it, you know, just call it about. And make that page really compelling about the, you know, why you're doing what you're doing, and, you know, the message and story behind it. The other thing that's really important with a website is actually to have a point to it, which I know sounds a bit rhetorical, but a point as in what is actually the next step from it. You know, if you're an author and you're writing a book, or you've written a book and you're promoting it, okay, well, people might come to the site and then they might ask about, or they might want to read about the background, but still think, what's actually the point? You know, is there something else that you have? Like, do you sell speaking engagements? Well, talk about that and give people an opportunity to get in contact and ask you to come speak. Or if you have a course or a workbook that you sell in, you know, to go in line with the book, well, make sure that it sells that. If you literally have nothing other than the book, but you really want to get people's feedback, then, you know, have forms for them to fill in feedback and send you so you can collect it and put it inside the next book or on your next marketing and things. But always think about what's the next step. The other thing is, anyone listening, definitely, you've got to have an email list, and you've got to have somewhere and pretty much everywhere on your website where people can sign up for that list. And if you can't think that you have a next step or a point to your website, it is get people on an email list. Even if you don't know why you're doing it, just get them on a list. because when you come to write the next book or come to promote something or talk about something else, then you'll soon realize why you've got that email list. And it's never too early to start building the list. You know, if you've got a seed idea for a book and you're just kind of writing a bit about it on the blog to try and get the idea formulated even in your own mind before you start writing and proposing it, then start getting people on an email list, because sooner or later you'll want feedback, you'll want testimonials, you'll want something, and ultimately you want to sell copies. So yeah, and all of that sounds technical and it sounds complicated, but it's not. You know, there's places like MailChimp where you can sign up for an email list for free. I know you use AWeber, and AWeber's really good service also. And it's easy to link up your website with an email list. It's not too complicated, and you can just get people on that list. You don't have to have a massive strategy for emailing people every, you know, second quarter of the day. You can just build them on a list and send them a note just every little while so they know that you're still there, you know, just to keep it warm and in the background. So yeah, home, about, and contact, and having a real point to it, and definitely having a way to collect email addresses. I think that's one of the big points of having your own site.
Great, and I'm glad you mentioned the email list, which you can't do on the free WordPress.com,
yes,
by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's a big detriment.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, and so since we're talking about WordPress and having a site on WordPress, there is, of course, the blog. So how do we use the blog to promote our, you know, to build our platform maybe before the book, or to promote and sell books? You know, how does blogging work? You know, how can we use it, and how does it work?
Yeah, blogging's a great thing. On a site like WordPress, there's basically two types of content. There's pages and posts. Pages are static content that you kind of keep going and tweaking and changing and publishing the change, like the about page. Then a blog is more point in time. Every time you publish, if you like, a page, then it goes in date order into an archive, and the newest post then comes in front of that one, and you can typically see them in reverse date order going down on the blog, on the archive. A blog is a really good place to get your message out. So if you're writing about a particular topic, like, well, we mentioned cupcakes earlier. So, you know, if you were writing or blogging about cupcakes, then what I would do is I would get a sheet of paper and I'd think around that topic. And what are the aspects about cupcakes? Well, I guess there's the whole issue of baking them. Then there's the issue of decorating them. Then there's probably something in there about different forms, like gluten-free. And then there might be, I don't know, perhaps something about savoury cupcakes. I'm starting to guess now.
Flavours. But there's four.
Yeah, that's right, flavours, yeah. So there you go, there's five areas. So for me, looking at that, I'd say, well, okay, those are categories. So in our blog, we can have in WordPress something called categories. And I tend to look at those as almost like buckets of content. And then that helps me schedule out the types of things I might want to write about. Because sometimes people get a, talking to someone I know who knows, of course, because you write about this. But I know that some people get a little bit worked up about how you're going to find these ideas for everything to write about. But if you start breaking it down and you think, well, okay, one category is decoration. Well, how do you decorate a cupcake? Well, you put icing on it, or you could put chocolate stars on it, or you know, you could then start separating out. And I bet if that was your passion, you could quickly come up with 20 decoration techniques in the decoration category. You could come up with 20 different flavors. You could come up with all of the different things that you can take in and out of them, you know, gluten and all this kind of stuff. Before you know it, you're going to have 50 post ideas. And you can start writing about those. And if you start sharing them on Facebook and building up some community, people are going to start coming back to your site. The one easy way to bring people to your website is write something that people want to come back and read. I've always thought one of the best types of websites to emulate as an author or as an entrepreneur is a garden website. Because gardening websites just have it made, because the seasons change, there are different things to do each season, and a gardening blogger can just blog through those things. You know, it's this time of year, you need to get out to your roses bush and you need to trim it back. And then in a few weeks' time, we're going to talk to you about how you're going to do that. In between that, we're going to talk about what you're going to do on the grass. And then we're going to talk about different types of seed. It must be great to be a gardening blogger because it's just laid out for you. So you have to do that with whatever topic you're in. Break it down into categories, get all that content, and then start blogging through that. And also look for the feedback. You know, when you write the gluten-free cupcake post and put a recipe on, if that's the one that people share lots and lots and they email you and say, wow, that was great, I didn't know you could even make cupcakes without gluten and that's fantastic, then we think, well, okay, great, I'll write a little bit more about that. And build up that audience a bit more. Get those people to understand that if they're on your email list, you'll get your next post about, cupcakes without gluten, and you're away to the races, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Makes it sound simple, but you know, in a nutshell, that's the kind of strategy.
Right, and so when you write in that way, you know, you're always writing about cupcakes.
Yeah.
What happens? What is the, you know, let's say you're doing that 3 days a week. What is it that happens in terms of the search engine results pages? Those pages we when we put something into the search engine, like we go to Google and we put in cupcakes or gluten-free cupcakes. Why is it that then that blog post shows up, you know, maybe on the first page? You know, how does that happen for us? Because that's what we're all wanting, right? So how do we make that happen?
Yeah, so everyone's looking, when they search on Google, everyone's looking for an answer. And Google gets a bad rap. Google's mission is no different than it was when they started. They want to give the person with a question the best answer. And although this, everyone knowing will laugh, because obviously it's not as easy as this, but the essence of the easiness of getting to the top of Google is write the best answer to the question. There's a lot of gaming to it, and some people try and make their website look like it's got a better answer and that kind of thing, but ultimately you need to have the best answer to the question. Now, sometimes, I imagine with cupcakes, there could be a lot of answers on the internet, and that's where you've got to drill down a little bit. So in our example, you know, gluten-free cupcakes, perhaps even just those that have a strawberry icing on top. Well, that might be a little niche for us. It might be that no one's quite written the best answer for that yet, and we can do that. Sometimes that happens by accident. I've got posts on my own blog that I wrote because I had something to say, and I didn't really know. You should never kind of say this. Of course, it's all by design, really. But I wrote it because I wanted to say it, and then afterwards you find, well, that's interesting. I'm getting 30, 40, 50 people a day Googling that phrase and they're coming to my site. So perhaps I'll write about that a bit more. You just need to write really good answers to questions. They can be questions that you've got or that you've found or you've got in your own mind, like how do you make a cupcake and have it be gluten-free? Is it actually possible? And then write out exactly how you do it. And never, ever worry about oversharing. You know, don't do that thing that people do where, you know, they write just a little bit and think, if people really want to know, then they'll get in contact. And, I might even then be able to charge them for the whole answer. No, they'll just go and look somewhere else. At that early stage, focus on writing as many good answers as you can and getting as many people to read them as you can, and you'll get the feedback on what people really like about what you're doing, and then from there you can judge where your business is.
For me, with How to Blog a Book, I was addressing an issue, I think, that needed to be addressed, but I also was blogging on the topic in a really focused manner, 3-4 days a week over 4 or 5 months. And I think that part of that, and correct me if I'm wrong, was maybe not glutting the web, or the or the space with that content, but there was nobody, sure. You know, there weren't that many people writing about it. And I provided the answer. I provided the content on a regular basis, and it drove me right up to the number one spot on the search engines.
Yeah, one of the things that Google's looking for when it looks at a site is a breadth of content. You know, if you've got a website about gardening and you publish one post about cupcakes, it's unlikely to get to the top of the search engines for gluten-free cupcakes. But if you've got a blog that's all about cupcakes and you've got 50 different recipes, and one of them is a fantastic recipe for gluten-free, well, then it might well get to the top of the search engines. And there's lots of other things on there as well. We could talk for hours just about how to optimize posts. But, you know, having images in that post and making sure that the images are optimized. So take a picture of your cupcake and whatever you do, don't upload it as image, you know, img001.jpg. Upload it as gluten-free-cupcake-recipe.jpg, because you might not write a blog post, or your site might not be old enough yet that you can get to the top spot of Google, but you know, you might actually manage to get your image onto the top of the image searches, which might show on the front page of Google, and when someone clicks it, they still get through to your site. Then a few people find it and share it on Facebook, and before you know it, then the post is there. Right.
So something I get asked about a lot for those who are blogging is keyword research. And they always want to know, you know, basically, how do they do it? And how do they know whether it's a good keyword or not? You know, so is it good to have it a high number or a low number, middle number?
Sure. Yeah. You always want to find keywords that people are using. The first thing I would say is never rely on tools alone. When you're thinking about the keywords to use, also ask people. If you've got any audience at all, then ask them. You know, if you've got friends and relatives and they know something about the topic, then ask them about it. You know, so if you're going to Google, I have to keep coming back to it. If you're Googling something about cupcakes, then go to some people, you know, some mums that you meet at school or something, and say, hey, you know, if you were looking for recipes for cupcakes, could you just have a little think for me this afternoon? What would you Google? Because I've done that with people on lots of different occasions, and I found that the answers you get back are not always what you're expecting, and they're definitely not always what a tool might tell you. So it's always good to get that human interaction. Then I would take that list and I would go to a keyword research tool and I would put some things in, and you don't want to look for the results that come right at the top. So you start a brand new blog today about cupcakes. Don't think that you're going to be top of page one tomorrow for the phrase cupcake recipes, because it's just not going to happen, because there'll be, I'm expecting, hundreds of thousands of sites out there that talk about cupcakes. But there could be a chance that perhaps gluten-free cupcake recipe UK, or, you know, gluten-free cupcake recipe California, I don't know, or, you know, chocolate gluten-free cupcake, something like that might be something that you have a little bit of chance on. In SEO, we call that long tail search phrases. So rather than cupcakes, it's a much longer phrase, which by definition means a lot less people will search for it, but equally a lot less people will be competing by having sites that are optimized for that phrase. So it gives you somewhere to start. It's always good in the back of your mind to have the big trophies like cupcake recipes in your sites, and one day you might get there. But in the meantime, focus on the little successes.
Great.
And there are lots of tools around for using that. Google have their Google Keyword Planner. You can go in there and just type in some phrases, and they'll tell you what people are searching for, and you can use those. There are also commercial tools on the internet. And then just look at it with some balance, you know, take an eye on keyword research, but don't let it dictate your strategy at the same time, because Google's also getting pretty smart. And, you know, if you, keyword research shouldn't be something that holds you back and stops you. If you can deal with it and you can get some keywords, fantastic. If you can't, don't kind of sit around stressing about it, then just start writing. Because Google will soon work out what you're talking about. And if it's good stuff, then people will start getting there and seeing it. And over time, you'll learn more about it.
Right. Yeah, what I usually tell people who get overwhelmed and don't even understand what keywords are, which basically they're the search terms we're putting into Google, right? I mean,
yeah.
But I usually tell them if they just stay focused on their topic and write about their topic organically, they will search engine optimize their content.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so what are the most important things a blogger needs to do today to succeed, which basically usually means to get traffic?
Yeah, that's right. You've got to get eyes to your website to read what you're writing about before you can do anything. That is the one thing with what I've said about, you know, building it on your own land. Well, therefore, you've got to get people over to your land to actually see what you've got. So number one always has to be you've got to have good content. Like I said earlier, people will forgive lots of things. They'll forgive design and everything else if what you're writing is really good. But they equally won't hang around on a beautiful website if what you're writing about isn't useful. So really just try and help people, I would say, in your subject. Try and be as helpful as you possibly can. And if you help people and give people solutions to problems and answer questions that people are asking around your topic, then you'll start building up an audience. Also, remember that most blogs fail early on because people quickly get fed up with the realization that at that early part, you're really shouting into a black hole. You know, we all start with no followers, no fans, no one on the email list, no traffic. But that is actually a really positive thing because equally, you'll make all of your mistakes at the beginning. You know, I guess like actors that don't like watching early films, a lot of bloggers don't like going back and reading their early posts because they think, oh, crikey, who wrote that? I never write like that now. So I actually think having that early part of time is quite good. Get your mistakes out of the way before you've got 5,000 visitors a week and people actually then start writing in their droves to tell you that you've written, you know, with a comma out of place. I think that's an early, it's okay early on to be like that, and just take it step by step. Don't get caught up in anything that holds you back. Just write. You know, a lot of people, I've seen this all over the place, but a lot of people I think say that the best way to become a better writer is to write. It's not necessary always to have the better design or the better tools or anything else. Just write. Do more of it. And more of it you do, you'll just get better at it. And the better you get at it, then more people are going to come and read what you've got to say. You've got to use social media to some extent. You know, you've got to direct people to what you're doing. Go easy on your friends and family. You know, they've been your friends and family for a while because they are, you know, it's your business venture or your book you're writing. It's not necessarily theirs. So that's something that I see quite often. People start a new blog and they think, but I have got an audience. I've got, you know, 200 friends and I've got my family. Well, if you want them to be friends, don't start emailing them every other day with your blog posts. By all means, share a bit on Facebook and show them, but let them take an interest if they want to. I honestly think being as helpful as you can around your chosen subject and showing the passion through answering questions in a really useful way is a really good thing. And take your time at that early stage to do that. I think back to when I started this business in 2011, and I used to spend hours every day answering questions in groups on LinkedIn because I had the time to do it. And that was how I used to get clients. I'd write a really long answer when someone answered a question. I'd direct them to a blog post that I'd written that went into more detail. I'd send them a message to say, hey, if you want to talk about this in more detail, then I can try and help you. And that often turned into coaching clients for me. But as you get busier, you don't have time to do that, and you lose some of that ability, and that can mean that you lose and create a bit of distance between you and people that are asking questions. So I think early stages of blogging are a bit like childhood. You don't want to rush through it too quick. You want to kind of learn the things you can learn while you're doing it.
Great. And so what about, you've talked about being in business. And so I think for, you know, I write a lot about the fact that most authors are going, well, maybe not most, but a lot of authors are going to think about creating a business around their books. And their websites are a great place to do that. Do you have one or two tips just for doing that, or why WordPress is good for that?
Yeah, well, the good thing with WordPress is, you know, it's running such a massive proportion of the web now. You know, there are different figures going around, but some people have said that WordPress is running up to about 22% of all of the websites, or the popular websites on the internet now. So that's really good, because when you get stuck with things and you need technical help, it'll be easier for you to get help and knowledge if you're using a platform that people know. But also, when it comes to actually running a business around your website and your book, people have been there before and they've created some great tools for you. You know, it's possible to quite easily, even with free tools, to get it set up so you can sell little things from your site, like workbooks, like tickets to classes, to get-togethers. You can add things on so that people can like your Facebook page without leaving your website and things like this. And you can just slot all of that in using little tools, which is great. And of course, we've got things like PayPal nowadays that didn't have 20 years ago. So you can set a WordPress website up now, and in a few hours, you can be selling something online and you can be taking payments for it, which is fantastic. That email list is the most important thing in all of this. If you've got the list, then you've got somewhere you can go to promote. But there are other tools, even more advanced stuff, like you can run courses on your own WordPress website, and there are specialist tools for doing that. WordPress really is perfect for that, and there's so many functions out there. But let your audience lead you a bit in that direction. A lot of smart people have said, you know, you can have a great plan and then, you know, your audience tells you what they really want. And it's good to listen to that. And if you start getting people emailing you through your contact page and saying, hey, I read your book, I read your blog posts, I'd love to be able to get some kind of course on how I can make those cupcakes just like you make them. Well, if you get a few people say that, well, then that's the time to get the notebook out and say, okay, so what would this course look like?
Right.
And if you do that, then you'll create something that your audience has already got a hunger for. So.
Right. Super, super advice. Okay, so we're just about out of time. Do you have any final words of wisdom for authors who want to start blogging and how they can succeed at it?
Yeah, I think just take your time at the beginning, and don't get too disheartened and worried about that period when you don't have any likes on Facebook, you don't have any comments on your blog, and you don't have lots of people emailing back to you. Because if you keep to it, it will happen. There's much, much too many blogs out there that are, sometimes we'd say orphaned, where someone wrote on them for a few months and got fed up and stopped, and they just hang around. If you stick with it, then it'll happen. And I've seen it happen really quick for some people. Within a period of months, they start getting traffic from Google and understanding that. And the other tip, I think, would be to learn something about some of the numbers behind it. there's a free tool from Google called Google Analytics that tells you how many people are visiting your site each day, which pages they're looking at. And it's never too early to learn the basics of that tool, because that will tell you what people like about your site, which pages they and blog posts they read most. Those are the ones that you want to talk about more to bring back more of the right people. And ultimately, that will bring you some traction and momentum, and that will lead you where you want to go.
Right. Great. Yeah, and definitely stick with it. I mean, I've been blogging a long time. This is not a short-term endeavor. So Robert, tell us about your services and how people can contact you.
Sure. Yeah, well, I help people create WordPress sites in the first place and actually create these platforms. So if you don't want to do all of that technical work yourself, and also you want to avoid some of those mistakes, get everything set up right, and also have someone work with you to understand, you know, that everything's connected up right, and perhaps even work with you a bit to understand those figures and the types of things you should be focusing on and what's working and what's not working, then I work with entrepreneurs around those areas. My site is fresheyesconsultancy.com. If you head over there, then I've got a contact page. You can send me questions and get in touch and say hi, and I can always talk to you and try and just be as much help as I can.
Well, and you've been a ton of help today. So, and Robert is always a big help to me. And again, it's fresheyesconsultancy.com and Robert Peters. And I hope everybody will go check it out and tell Robert that you heard about him here on this program, and go out and blog.
Yeah, that's right. So look forward to reading all of your blog posts about gluten-free cupcakes.
That's right. So thank you very much, Robert. This was wonderful.
Thank you.
I appreciate you taking the time and being here to give this great information.
That's great. I enjoyed it. Thanks very much.
I did too. It was nice to see you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, everyone. This is Nina Amir, the Inspiration to Creation Coach. Until the next time, go out and achieve more inspired results.